Right, good day, folks, and welcome to yet another edition of the Citizen Talk. This is where we invite different people to come and, unpack some of the most difficult issues that the country is facing. And we thought this week we should invite Mokoena Maluleke, who's the General Secretary of the South African Democratic Teachers Union, SATU, in short. That's the biggest teacher union in the country. And we thought, yeah, let's talk education and see how far we are, what are the challenges, in the system and so forth. But thank you so much, Mokoena, for coming through and for, agreeing to spend some time with us this morning.
Oh, thank you so much. Let me greet your followers and appreciate this particular opportunity for us to come and talk about education.
Absolutely.
One of the most important thing for any other country that needs to develop should be education.
Absolutely. No, thank you so much once again, Mr. Maluleke. Mr. Maluleke, first question. If I were to ask you what's the state of affairs in as far as education in the country is concerned, how would you describe the situation for us?
Well, in simple terms, I would say that this, the education system as a system is stabilizing, it's maturing, and we're beginning to see progress in around curriculum that has been revised four times, basically. And we begin to see, of course, that whilst we're stabilizing, we're beginning to see some form of quality being produced by this particular maturing system. What I refer as quality is that we're no longer looking at the overall pass rate and say it's 80, it's 95 or so. We're looking at how many of our learners are able to make it through to universities, higher education institutions, whether it's the colleges and many others, because we're living in the 21st century. You're looking at areas of IT, are you seeing these particular students having left the normal schooling in areas in insurance, in finances, in everywhere else where there's IT and so forth? And we're beginning to see that indeed, while we may not talk about those particular things, we're beginning to see our learners making it.
And talking about quality, I mean, oftentimes whenever the metric results are released, annually, there would always be that comparison, between public schools and those who write under the IEB. Surely that should still be something that's concerning, because there's always that difference in terms of the pass rate and, mark.
Yes, that's why I'm very cautious. Instead of saying we're happy, I will never use the word happy because obviously it is that we need to understand that education depends on a number of things. One, it depends on human capital, but also it depends more importantly on cultural capital.
Yeah.
And we can sum up and say those two basically would make up what we call social capital. Now, a student in the rural area whose parents are working in Rustenburg and is staying in Ngqothu or in Bizana clearly doesn't have all of those three.
Sure.
And therefore, it is going to also impact on the education of that particular learner. A learner who comes from a well-off family will progress better than the learner who is not, because those particular parents can afford to appoint a tutor for the student to be taught. So that comparison will always be there on the basis that, one, you are seated with 85 learners in a public school, in a class, whereas in a private school, you are seated with 22 learners in a class for a teacher. So that particular gap is huge for us to even begin to say we are comparing apples with apples because it's two different things here and so forth. So that particular inequality has been exacerbated by the COVID-19. We have seen some learners were able to access education throughout online, whereas others had to do rotational. And that has really cost us almost like 7 years of losses in terms of teaching in public schools.
And are there any plans, put in place to sort of recover that lost teaching and learning time?
Well, now we're coming to the teachers, because for them to recover, they had to sacrifice their families. They had to work afternoon, they had to work in the evening, they have to work during the weekend, and some of them sleeping in schools, in particular in rural areas, they well, invite parents, invite students to make sure that they help them over the weekend and sleep, then come back home on Sunday. That is not educationally sound. Let's be honest. It's not an ideal situation.
Absolutely
but you
not.
Do it because you have to improvise as a teacher. And I'm very grateful of the teachers. And I wish our country can be grateful of these particular teachers to say the losses that we have seen, this is what we're going to sacrifice to making sure that we recover, but at the same time, make sure that we protect the future of our children.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the grade 12 of this year is one of those particular special classes that ourselves as an organization say these are the children that have seen it all. They have suffered immensely in terms of the rotational classes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And still on the issue of challenges, you know, faced particularly by, teachers, what other challenges would you say, you know, are there in, you know, remain unresolved still?
Well, the legacy of apartheid is very stubborn, I must indicate, because you still have, toilets that are kid latrines.
Mm-hmm.
You still have some schools in the rural areas that are still not proper for learning in the form of mud schools. And where you are sharing the classroom with goats in the evening, there are goats inside there. You run, and then in the morning, our children go there. You still have got learners in this country that have got to cross rivers to access schooling, and these are the challenges that we still see in terms of the infrastructure issues. In this country, we still have some schools that have got a swimming pool that is almost the size of an Olympic swimming pool, when the others have never seen a swimming pool. And obviously, these are the children that must also be competing in the economy, the same as the other children that have been exposed to all these particular things. So the issues of, broadbands in our schools for the learners to access the teaching materials online is still an issue. It's still a challenge for our teachers. It's still a challenge for our learners. They have not been digitally equipped. Whereas the others, in terms of a formal economy and the other economy, which is the second economy, because we have got two economies in the country, that for the poor and that for the rich, they have got all set up for them for success.
Big issue, that's faced by teachers is the issue around salaries.
Yes. The issue of the salaries is a burning issue for the country. And it's a matter that some of us are beginning to contemplate whether we should be remaining in the PSCPC to negotiate salaries there, or we should negotiate salaries sectorally so that we are able to address the uniqueness of each and every sector, because we are not being able to address the issues that affect professionals per se, because at the end of the day, we have got to compete for scarce resources that are there. And at the same time, you have got to deal with the already cut cake that has been adopted as a budget of government. So therefore, negotiating with government is not the easy way of negotiating, because once the budget is passed, it's policy, and therefore you will not be able to change that. So if we can change our approach when we want to improve that, we may have to look sectorally, we may have to influence the budget and say, let's begin negotiation as quick as possible before February, so that the minister must then be able to say, when cutting the cake, and say, this is the cake that I've already negotiated with Labour in recognition of the work that they are doing for the public. So it's those are some of the things that we're beginning to look at and say, are we in the right place? Because we are negotiating with 1.3 million people with different interests and so forth. And are you able to really address all those particular interests, but at the same time making sure that you don't lose the teachers, you don't lose the nurses, you don't lose the doctors in public, whereas we have seen that we've lost doctors and so forth. So it's because of how we have got to utilize that small cake for all of us at the end of the day. And really it is that as a union, you also want to say there must be not too much gap between those that are in level 1 and those are in level 12. But at the same time, there's a way that you need to also address the retention of these particular professionals being teachers.
Absolutely. Now, still on the issue of salaries, I mean, there's talk, as you and I are speaking now, of, public servants going on strike. As SATU, would you also be, taking part in such an industrial action? And I'm asking this question, particularly also considering that the exams have started already.
Thank you so much for that, because we as an organization throughout the negotiation, we've been, you know, going back to our members, giving them information on a weekly basis, on a daily basis sometimes, and explaining the situation for them to the extent that they allow their structures at the lower level of the branches and the regions to be able to debate these particular issues. And having debated that, we all continuously look for mandate. We started at 0%. We went for 1.5%. We went back to them and say, the employer says they don't have money, and therefore what you say, we went to 2%, they rejected it, and so forth. And then finally, when the employer revised that to 3%, our structures then took a decision to mandate the National Executive Committee to take a resolution to accept. Hence, we will not be forming part of the dispute, because we have a position to say we accept. We respect other unions that have taken a decision to dispute, and then we also hope that they can respect our decision to say we accept the offer.
Yeah. And obviously, there's also been that other issue of that multi-year agreement with the employer. What's the latest around that? Because, you know, last time I heard that matter was even in the courts.
Yes, it's a burning issue, because after the employer has reneged on Resolution 1 of 2018 in 2020, not affording us an increase, went to court. Obviously, some unions went to court and we have to join them.
Yeah.
And after having joined them, we even went to the Constitutional Court. We lost the case there. And therefore, since that day, you will never go and tell a worker, in particular our teachers, and say, go a multi-term agreement. Because the fear is going to be, you sign a multi-term agreement, when the economy goes bad, then the employer is going to renege on it. What protection do you have? So you need to build in more protection. So there is no multi-term agreement for now since 2021. Even this year, there's no agreement 2022, except that the employer has already implemented what was the final offer.
Now, how does that make you feel as workers, as teachers, you know, when the employer comes to you and say, you know what, we don't have enough money in our coffers, we therefore cannot afford your demands. And in this case, the employer, by the way, is your family. You know, you are in the same tripartite alliance, which is led by the ANC. How does that make you feel?
Well, as workers, we fully understand that it doesn't matter which organization is going to be in power.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter at all. When you are living in a capitalist society, the struggle continues. You've got to wage that struggle on a daily basis, and you've got to be able to not be defocused or distracted from what exactly you are dealing with. Because if we begin to say, is the ANC or is the DA or whatever, we're going to lose that which we're supposed to be. An employer is an employer. It doesn't make a difference. So therefore, it makes us very angry when any employer, in particular government, is applying austerity measures and not having an understanding and appreciation that majority of the workers are doing essential work. Of course, education is not an essential service, but education itself is very essential. You will not have economic growth. You will not have good health system in the country. You will not be able to deal with inequality and poverty unless you address the issue of education. So an investment in education is critical for all aspects of life. And therefore, our politicians in government, all the parties, African National Congress, and everyone in there, they don't have an understanding and appreciation of education. Hence, you will never hear them now even calling to order communities that are protesting to stop our children from writing. I mean, you'll never hear this in any way in the world. Even where there's war, the people in war will never stop the children from writing their examination. It can only happen here because we are not demonstrating as the people of our country and as the top leadership of our country in cabinet, in parliament, that says we will protect education by making sure that there's no austerity measures, that we address the infrastructure, we address the teacher salaries, and making sure that we pay them for what they do for our country as nation builders and so forth. Of course, the teaching fraternity globally is ranking number 3. And that is what we have got to confront and say, why is it that we produce all these particular professions, but we are ranking number 3 in terms of whether learners want to go for teaching? He said, no, I'm going for engineering. I'm going for doctor. I'm not going for teaching. So it makes us very angry as the leadership of the union that we sit at with our own government that we voted for that does not appreciate the importance of teachers, doesn't appreciate the importance of education for us building a very sustainable economy.
Now, Mr. Maluleke, as SATU, you belong to COSATU. COSATU belongs to an ANC-led tripartite alliance. When you observe and you look at the ANC's performance, you know, as leader in government over the past, almost 30 years, how would you describe it?
Well, I must say that we've made some progress because where we started, basically, I must say we had a lot of inequalities, a lot of disparities between whites, colors, Indians, and African people. And we had to consolidate those things and deal with those particular things. So to that extent, we have done very well. When you're looking at the availability and accessibility to education, I can say that we've done very well because we have been able to increase the number of learners that were in the streets, the number of learners that were working on the farms and not accessing education by making sure that education is free for each and every child. And that, I can say, the African National Congress government has made a progress around that particular issue. The feeding of our learners. You know, when a learner has not eaten and come into a school with a very empty stomach, the teachers used to buy food for those particular learners. Today we do that. But, of course, whilst I'm mentioning these particular positives that we have seen, we still have the negative. One is corruption. I must say that in education, the African National Congress was not able to attend the issues of corruption.
Yes.
And corruption has taken a lot of money. It has stolen a lot of money for our poor children that are supposed to have good infrastructure in the township, in the rural area. They are not having that because of that particular corruption. Our children are not participating in sports today as compared to you and I who participated throughout in sports, even if it was during apartheid. But our African National Congress government that is led by our African National Congress has really, actually relegated sports and gave it to the sports department, which doesn't talk to us in terms of our children in there today. So how can we identify good sports people to be able to make a living out of that? That it's a negative on the side of the African National Congress. But obviously, in terms of really funding education, we are funding education at 6% of the GDP. So basically, in compliance with the global requirement. But you need to go back two steps and say, do we have to do that? Do we have to say we're stuck with a global requirement when we are dealing with backlog, when we're dealing with a legacy of apartheid that undermined the infrastructure in African schools, Indian schools, and colored schools? Therefore, you need to appreciate the fact that that 6%, you've got to increase it so that you are able to address that. In that way, I can say we didn't do very well. African National Congress didn't do well because, again, it goes back. Do you have an attitude about education?
Sure.
Do you understand that any country that wants to progress must invest in education? So you can't stick to the 7-6%. In a traffic, you should be up 9%, 10%. You spend there because you know that it's an investment. It's going to address the issues of health. It's going to address the issues of crime in our country.
Yeah.
Unemployment and many other things. It will address that. But you can only do that if you understand the importance of education. But if you are just a politician who is taking political work as a career and not as a service to the people, you will not understand it because you are there just to earn a salary. You are not there to say, I'm going to serve the people, and I'm going to prioritize this that I understand to be the core for any other nation to develop, which is education.
Absolutely. Folks, we are in a conversation with the General Secretary of the South African Democratic Teachers Union, SATU in short, Mr. Bokwena Maluleke. Mr. Maluleke, I want us to just briefly go back again to the challenges that, you know, the sector is facing. I mean, let's even not go that far back in terms of challenges. Now the country is faced with an issue of load shedding. It's a serious electricity, you know, energy crisis that we are facing. The exams just started now recently, the year-end exams. What reports have you been receiving from all the 9 provinces? Has there been any challenges, you know, with regards to pupils getting ready, for the exams, you know, maybe having load shedding at home while studying or load shedding taking place at schools as well where they are sitting for those exams?
Well, I must appreciate that because that is the current problem that we are facing as a country, is the load shedding. And the blackouts have got multiple problems for our students and our teachers. So let me start with the examination for now so that then we deal with it. Yesterday, on Monday, basically, because today is Wednesday, we have received reports that, load shedding was worse in schools, in particular in the Northwest, that it affected our students. However, because the students are not using computers to write examinations, they were able to write in the dark classes and so forth. However, what it does at the second level is the arriving late to a school like in Pietermaritzburg. We received reports that some learners have to arrive late, and to the extent that these papers also arrive late in one of the examination centers. Obviously, as a result of traffic lights not working, piling up on this particular convoy in the morning when we're supposed to be traveling and then getting late. And then it means there must be flexibility of the learners to be given time to be able to write. But what does it mean for a learner who is stuck in traffic? Anxiety level rises. The moment you arrive at school at 9:30, when you're supposed to be sitting down at 8:45, it's 45 minutes of nightmare. Mental health issues starts there because you start stressing. Now, what we're not aware and what we're not recognizing, because we are teachers, we know the first subject you write gives you an indication how prepared you are. But the 45 minutes of anxiety when you're going to write that particular subject and then you write with that level of stress, it may also affect your next subject. Because you are going to start being worried. And once you start, you know, utilizing your mind, worrying and so forth. But that it doesn't end there. In the evening, there's no electricity for you to study. 2 hours of load shedding or blackout means another 2-3 hours of anxiety, of you worrying on whether you will be able to make it tomorrow and so forth. So we are saying it has got long-term effect to this particular examination. And that's what ESCOM was supposed to look at it and not say, because you are not writing computer, apply technologies or technology which you have written, and therefore it can always be rescheduled and so forth. Supposed to look at how we support our children to be able to study in the evening, to be able to study anytime they want to study. Whether they want to wake up at 4:00, they need to do that. An examination is a tense period for any student. We keep on saying psychosocial services is a challenge in this country. We have got fewer people that can help us in terms of, you know, occupational therapists and so forth, to really take a hand of this particular student and say, yes, you couldn't study enough. However, you made it for grade 1 to grade 12. You need to appreciate that you are there. Please lessen your level of stress and not utilize your adrenaline to deal with what you cannot change, which is ESCO. Rather, use your adrenaline to address what you can do in terms of your studies and so forth. So that is one of those particular challenges we face. The other challenge I must indicate is the violence. I mean, yesterday, basically in Zirast,
There's been protests, right?
Yes. Our children and our teachers were subjected to another trauma when they're supposed to access the examination centers. And again, we are making a call to say no nation can really destroy a future of a child, of the youth, because the youth is the future. And you're destroying the future, basically, because you can attain a tarred road by blocking the children from writing. The long-term damage on that particular community, it is that they will live with a tarred road but not be able to drive in that road because there's crime, there's hijacking, and so forth. And they will not go back and say, it was on the 1st of November that we blocked these children from writing. They will not remember that. But they will remember that they can't write or drive on that particular tight road. And we're making a call that it can be that we block the children from writing. We appreciate and understand their needs. And we want to appreciate the Premier of the Northwest looking to intervene today and engage with them. So today our learners are writing. We want to thank the community for understanding and for their appreciation of education. So violence is something that we as SADU do not subscribe to. Hence, we have got a campaign called I Am a School Fan that says, you as a parent, you as a pastor, you as a worker must take education first.
Absolutely. And I mean, when one looks at this incident that you're referring to in Zirast Northwest, it's not something new, right? I mean, in my, 20-year career as a journalist, we've covered so many protests. I mean, I remember, and I'm just going to mention one or two of those. You remember the issue in Kuruman some years ago where schools were literally closed for 3 months. 3 months. Then you come back to the northern parts, Vuani. Schools were torched. Huh?
But then, as a journalist, as my brother, have you ever had that in any country where there's war? Let's take, for example, in Syria. Is that happening?
No.
It's not happening. Let's take Ethiopia. Is that not it? Is it, there's war in Ethiopia now. Is it happening? It's not happening. They don't touch schools. Mm. They don't block children from going to there. So we need to address our problems. We are too angry as a society in South Africa. And this anger that make us not to even see that we are harming our children, it needs to be addressed.
Talking about anger, I put it to you, Mr. Maluleke, that people are hurtful because of the ANC-led government. Do you agree with me?
I agree with you. I fully agree that people are angry, and that's why I'm saying the country is very angry, and you need to address that particular anger. But anger in itself, you can't live in it.
Yeah.
And you must never allow anger to drive you to do things that you are not going to be happy to see after that. Well, I can't be happy that I have blocked Elena from going to school because I was angry that I needed water. Because I will get the water, but I will never reverse the damage that has gone into this learner who could not write metric, who could not pass, and therefore the learner drops out and join the army of unemployed, and therefore the parents who were hoping that this particular learner is going to make a change in their family then continue to be in that particular situation. So we are a lawlessness society, and therefore we need to deal with that. And at the ANC government and ourselves, we have got to work together as the people of this country to restore law and order in our society. Of course, people are hurtful, and I agree with you. We are all hurtful about the things that are happening. But I would always urge that we have got a pause button, all of us, in our forehead. We must press that and say, do I want to take decisions when I'm angry? I don't think that is the right way to do.
Absolutely. And I've been talking about while we're still on that issue of people being angry, being hurtful. Remember just recently, the COSATU's elective conference, Gwere Mantashe, chairperson of the ANC, being booed off the stage, you know, and then again, in that very same Congress, you know, talks about, you know, whether or not COSATU unions should, you know, continue supporting the ANC, you know, ahead of the 2024 general election. What's SATU's position? I'm not sure how far you've gone, you know, in terms of, you know, getting a mandate, you know, from your members. What are they saying about the ANC? Should, you know, you guys still support or continue support the ANC?
Well, the SATU, as an independent and autonomous organization, takes its decision independently from COSATU, and takes this decision independently from the African National Congress. And when we took this decision a long, long ago to then say we support the African National Congress, it was on the basis that as the tripartite alliance, we have a vision that says that we need to have a better life for all in this country. Of course, corruption came in. Maybe we didn't plan properly to deal with those particular issues and so forth. So these are the things that we need to deal with. So our position still stands. It is that when you look at other resolution of other parties, when they take over this country, they are very clear that, one, they're going to amend the Labor Relations Act. And in amending it, their concern is that workers have rights. And they think that the economy is not growing in this country because workers have got more rights. So if you look into the policy of such an organization, then you are bound to say, as compared to this other one, which is the African National Congress, which is more closer to the workers, which is not going to amend the Labor Relations to take away the rights, you would rather be stuck with that and say, better the devil you know. Work with them and change them from within and make sure that these people who have joined for purposes of resources are exposed. And we're seeing that it's happening under the leadership of Cyril Ramaphosa, that how many people are being now arrested, top guns, that under normal circumstances would have not been touched. They would be untouchable. But obviously, they are from time to time visiting the court. Some of them are visiting prisons. And obviously, that we think that is a sign that our democracy is growing. And we can't relax. We can't be complacent society. We need to work very hard to expose each and everything that is done by our own fellow comrades and be able to say this person has got to be dealt with and so forth, because we have proved that this person has stolen from the people. So our position is that we'll have to call a special congress for us to change that decision whether to support the ANC or not support the ANC.
Yeah.
Hence, we're saying to COSATU, give us an opportunity for us to go through our own processes. Our processes are different, because we don't just go and say, no, we love this one because this one is ideologically correct. No. We do look at the material conditions of our members and say, what is it that you are offering? And so forth. So can we support somebody who's going to destroy labor rights? No, we can't. Of course, the ANC now also, government has interfered in collective bargaining. We need to address those particular issues. So, but in simple terms, is that SATU will go to a special congress if the party and COSATU make a call that they are ready and so forth. But we cannot guarantee that the Congress in reviewing will say dump the ANC for another person. Maybe the Congress will be saying strengthen the tripartite alliance. You have the National Democratic Revolution to achieve. You cannot achieve that when you are entities separated. You need to come together and be united and say we still have got a vision that we must achieve.
Now, when you look at the current president Cyril Ramaphosa, you've mentioned that there's some good things that's been happening under his leadership. You mentioned the fact that you've started seeing people getting arrested for alleged corruption, people appearing in court and so forth. The 55th National Conference, elective conference of the ANC, is just around the corner. Should Cyril Ramaphosa come back as leader, according to you, as SATU?
Well, the National Executive Committee hasn't debated that issue. We'll be debating at the beginning of December and make a decision to whether support or not support him to come back, because he works as a collective, but under his leadership, we have seen that. So, but I cannot pronounce because SATU hasn't pronounced.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. Now, moving forward, Mr. Maluleke. Again, still on the 55th conference coming up, and that's not the only conference that we've had. I mean, we had the policy conference as well. Do you think that education, the issue of education, is placed, top on the agenda of these various conferences that the ANC is hosting? And what are you hoping to expect, from this conference in December of the ANC? Are you expecting a lot more, around the issue of education?
I think my organization said was to do more, because the answer is no. The education is not top. Education, verbally speaking, is that yes, is the apex priority of our government. That's the issue.
Sure.
It's the apex priority for the ANC, but in practical terms, it's not. There's no appreciation for education. I don't see it being prioritized. I don't see it being one of those particular resolutions that would come out there and say, we now understand education. For us to be able to deal with the pandemics that we don't know when they are going to come, we cannot do anything else except to go and invest in education. Okay? Because we have got to prepare ourselves for the future. So I don't see it for now being a priority in this particular coming conference, from even the policy conference itself. I don't see it. And I think that is where, as unions, we have got to play a very key role to then say, let's make sure that we are able to elevate these things that we know are very important for the people of our country, like education, to be a priority, and see it practical, that any other leader that is going to come out of that particular conference is able to implement. I'm saying this because four conferences ago, we have resolved on the Great R as well as the ECD. How long did it take for us to be where we are? We are still grappling with the transition of our ECD from the social development to education. Still struggling. Is there money? No, there's no money. We're struggling with the transition. There's no money to make sure that is injected for our children to enjoy early childhood development, which is the fundamental right for any parent and for any child and for any country. Education is not grade 12. Education is there. In the foundation phase. I don't see that. The NDP said that we need to be able to have the 4 years in great R, which is great RR. We don't have that today. How many conferences from 2012, from 2007, those resolutions were there? So I'm saying the resolutions may be there in the ANC, but the leadership that is elected in the ANC doesn't appreciate education. It does not understand the role of education and the importance of it. They can talk about it. It's easy for you and I to talk about education is very important. Don't disrupt it. That is just for for verbal consumption.
Sure.
It's not for practical reasons that you say the economy is stagnant for many, many years. Unemployment is high. Why? Because of education. Because of the skills that we're not able to impart to our learners and so forth. So why don't you then say, we can do many other things, but let's do one. Let's do education and see if we cannot get ESCOM right. Because we've been able to do education that deals with ethics.
Sure.
That the people that graduate out of the education system are built to love the country, are built to love their people, and they go to ESCOM there and not steal and not sabotage. You send executive management to ESCOM that is informed by this stealing mentality because of their education background that says we want to be like those who are oppressing us. They are rich, they are driving this, so I want to drive that as a matter of agency instead of saving the people. So I'm quite aggrieved about that because I don't see this conference that is coming in December, elevating education to the status where it's supposed to be, unless we as an organization from now onwards, we do work and make sure that we influence our delegates who are members in their own right in the branches of the African National Congress to go there and as members there and as delegates who are more important to elect and be able to take resolutions. That is the resolution that will then be able to restore some hope in our children and our teachers that we're taking education seriously.
Absolutely. Now, another issue that's been plaguing the country, Mr. McGregor, it's a big headache for government as well, is around infrastructure. Now, I mean, we can talk about, bridges, we can talk about roads and this and that, but on education, we're looking at schools. We still hear today of schools that do not have proper sanitation, they don't have toilets, they don't have, even proper classrooms. What's the situation around that? And I'm sure you've been observing, you've been informed by your own members in different provinces.
Well, I must say that when we approach that particular question, it brings back what colonialism and apartheid designed and designated. So It did very well in designating a black life as not important, as not useful, and therefore also then defined the resources that must go there,
sure,
which our leaders did not address. Because I ask myself, why is it that in Waterkloof High School, if there's no water, the management will send the children back home and say there's no water. But you go to Mamelodi High in Mamelodi, the student will be expected to be there when the toilets are not flushing for the whole day. You cannot close it. You have a district director or you have got an MEC who says the school must not close, but you won't say the same thing with Waterkloof. Won't say the same thing with the Melrose High School. So it then begins to say, we're still living in that era where an African or a black life, it's not as valuable as a white life. Okay, so hence you would have a situation where it is acceptable for a school in Witbank to have dilapidated toilets and the teachers work in there and the learners work in there. Then the inspector come to the school, visit the school, and then see nothing wrong with such a toilet that the teachers are subjected to, that our children are subjected to. You have a politicians who will go and say, yeah, we appreciate the fact that we are working on, eradicating pit latrines. Appreciating that we are eradicating pit latrines in 27 years. You know what? If those pit latrines were in Santen, they would have been eradicated within a wink of an eye.
Yeah.
Because those people in Santen do not deserve that type of life. Okay, their life is valuable as compared to that particular life. Hence, there is no agency around how you want to deal with those particular issues. So infrastructure is related to how colonialism and how apartheid has shaped our thinking and our appreciation to education and our appreciation to the life of our people. It has shaped us, and hence it's taking time for us to change the mindset of those who are policymakers and those who have got to provide resources for this particular infrastructure to look into themselves and say, I'm here with my dark skin. How do I feel that I come from that particular rural area and my school is still having a pit latrine, that my school still suffers, that does not have tap water? Okay. So how do I feel? No, but it's fine because you are driving a Land Rover.
Sure. Is it not also that issue of, you know, you have politicians, you've got government leaders who are so detached from their respective constituencies or, you know, communities?
They're not detached. They still drink with us in the township. they still come for funerals in the township. The issue is the mindset, is your attitude. How do you... You, it's fine for you to have a flushing toilet, but it is acceptable. It's not like it's fine. It is that it's acceptable. At least it's a half a loaf is better than nothing. That mentality is a problem because you cannot say it is right for that child to stay at school without water. It's right for that particular school to have a blocked toilet that is not even a septic tank is not being cleaned. And then you say, but you have got to be there for 5 days. But you can't be there for 5 days when a simple, you know, what you call tap has broken, water is running. The principal of Waterloo or the principal of another school would be saying this is hazard for the children. And you as an inspector or as a district director, you appreciate it quickly. And you say, please inform the parents. The children will not be at school. We're sorting out this particular thing. But it takes you 5 years for you to appreciate a school in Soweto that does not have enough toilets for girls. And these particular girls have got to go behind the walls of that particular toilet because this is blocked. It cannot be repaired. Because you the thing here, what I want to show you, it is that when you are mentally damaged, like Nkunduwa Tuoko has said and Amilka Cabral have said, and Frantz Fanon, it takes time for you to deal with your understanding to say, why is it acceptable there and not acceptable here? Because every time it's going to give you that particular fear and that says that these ones can manage. They are used to working in this particular difficult situation. They can manage and the others can't. I'm saying that can't be acceptable.
Is it, again, not that issue of, and where I was making a comparison, Mr. Maluleke, between, you know, when one looks at the pass rates, you know, we always compare private schools, IEP, you know, your public schools. You also mentioned or highlighted some of the contributory factors, you know, that leads to that. For instance, you know, if you look at the classroom in a township public school, how many learners are there with one teacher having to deal with all those compared to what we're seeing, you know, in private school? Why do you think that that's still the case, that we are still grappling, you know, with such, I don't want to call them simple issues, but it's things that could have been resolved long time ago.
Simple. I agree with you. It's attitude. It's your mindset. If you are grown up in a mindset that half a loaf is better than nothing, you are not going to see anything wrong.
No.
For going to Wheat Bank or going to Bushbuckridge, and where you will find all toilets blocked, or 115 learners in Hamatlala, where I normally would visit, and then the teachers they are producing A in physical science out of a class of 115 learners in a classroom. You know why they produce that? It's because the teachers tell themselves, "This, we are nation builders. I will sacrifice my family. I will not eat dinner with them. I will not go and read bedtime stories for my granddaughter or my daughter. I have a daughter. I have a son here in the school. I'm going to work there until 8 o'clock in the evening. I will arrive late. It's accepted. It's educational, it's not sound. But this is the improvisation that the teachers are doing. It is not ideal. It is not sustainable. Don't take advantage of the fact that the people will sacrifice for their lives every time. Things are changing. Change that classroom to be 1:40 in terms of policy. Change that classroom to be a flushing, you know, the toilet to be flushing. You cannot enjoy that I visited the school, they produced these good results. And then we go to the TV, all of us, we are happy, and say, the department's done very well. This MEC and that MEC are competing, number one and number two. Stop this competition. It's not helping you. You're competing when people are killing themselves. The teachers are dying of stress.
I was about to ask,
because they are not having family time. And others, you are having family time. You are having an aircon in your office. You are traveling with a government vehicle that is put petrol. That person does not have money to even travel to go and help those particular learners. It's taking money from his own family and making debts and so forth that they are killing our teachers to be admitted in hospital, to making sure that learner that you are going to be parading as an MEC on the 9th of January, parading them there. These are the top performers. Where were you when they were performing? Because this is the teacher's work. And the teachers have sacrificed their time, their families, their children, and their grandchildren, some of them. And they have not been seeing them. And because they wanted this particular learner to protect their future. And they've done that. Not because of you. They're doing it because of they are teachers. And by nature, teachers are caring individuals. They will never destroy their children. Because these are their children. But they are destroying themselves. They are destroying their own blood. Because they never stay with them. They have no time to stay with them. Look at the book, at the boot of a car of a teacher. It's always books. They don't have time to prepare. They don't have time to mark. They must use their time at home to mark, to prepare. Because at school, you are not providing for them. Because where they use classes, you can't have that. Compare it with other countries where there will be Wednesday in the preparation time. We have a cluster here. Head of departments of this school is going to work with those particular people. It's built into the system. Our system is not sustainable. It's built on sacrifices and sacrifices of the teachers. We need to arrive at the time where with the early childhood development is our investment so that we also have the grade 12 learner in Soweto, in Malawandofu, somewhere there in Giani, being able to take a trip when they close in June, like all the other children who go to Australia, New Zealand. They never stay in the school because they have been able to be afforded skills they require at early childhood development because their parents could afford, or because their economy, which is their own economy, can afford. Our economy, which is an informal, a more poor economy, is not able to afford that. We need to address those things.
Absolutely. Now, Mr. Maluleke, again, you remind me of that issue again. We've touched on it briefly of, you know, salaries not being enough. Now, this leads me now to this, and I'm not sure if this still happens. In recent years, there's been a situation where teachers take early retirement, you know, just so that they can get hold of their pension money because economically things are tough at all. And this was way before, actually, way before these tough economic conditions that we find ourselves in, you know, really kicked in. In fact, this thing has been happening some years ago, you know, where teachers go on early pension, get their pension. After a few months or a year, they're back at school. That still happened.
Well, it's still happening, but not at that alarming rate that used to have it, because we've been able to do some workshop, making them to understand. The cause of that has been their education is expensive in this country. Education in higher institution is expensive. So teachers, in part as the nurses, do not qualify for assistance by government in the form of NAFTAs. Okay? So therefore, they have got to pay full amounts for the universities and full amount for the boarding of their students and meals for their students. And therefore, they have to sacrifice. Hence, they find themselves in debt. And if an opportunity was to arise that they can go and get their money, they will do it. And they've done it. However, it comes with very serious consequences for that. Because when they come back, they don't acquire the necessary 10 years for them to retire as pensioners, which means they will only get their lump sum and that's it. And therefore, they will die as paupers, irrespective of whether they have worked. Some of them, they are lucky to come back and able to conclude the 10 years. But the issue is that if you are to receive 20 rand, you are going to receive 2 rand when you retire. So we show them all these particular negative things about elite. But they tell you that Emmanuel, I hear you and your education that says I must not go and take my money. My child, number one, this didn't get the results. He's home. This one is my second child. He's at the university. He has not received the result and he has got to go and
yes.
register.
Yes.
So tell me, will you give me money aside? I must go and pay. Because if you say, don't take my money, I must not retire because I'm going to hand over 45% of my retirement back to SARS. Which, when you are sitting here, you may want to say, no, but this person really should have done something else. Because, I mean, if you were to get, what, 1 million, you take 450,000 and throw it back to SARS. And you only get 550,000. And then in 6 months, it's gone. But this person tells you straight, I'm here. You can see my face. My son or my daughter is at home, not working, didn't get the result from the university. If I can pay with this money and get the result, he can get a job. Or he can create a job and help me to pay for this other. So it's education. It's the mortgage bonds that also is making them to be not able to afford their lives that they want to live, because they have got to have a roof over their children. And therefore, they go into mortgage bond. And with the interest rate going up and up and up, it led to the withdrawal of pensions because the inflation was going up. I mean, it's only 2 years that we're enjoying low inflation.
Sure.
Now we are going again, seeing the Reserve Bank is raising their interest rates and raising. That's not good for anyone who has got a mortgage bond. It's not good for anyone who has got a car. Like the teachers, I mean, they are in that particular category that they buy this thing through high purchase.
Sure.
And clearly it is that if there was another opportunity for them to go and draw the money from the pension, they would do it. Hence, for now, we are saying it's important for them to access something out of the pension without them having to resign their jobs so that they are able to manage all the other debts that they have that were caused, unfortunately, by the material conditions obtaining and not because of them, because they're not being assisted with the school for their children.
Absolutely. And on top of that, I mean, they earn peanuts.
Yeah.
And they've been earning peanuts for years.
Exactly, because education is not taken seriously. We thank them after, in January, we forget about the teachers. We celebrate on the 5th of October. On the 6th of October, we have forgotten about them. When the children fail, it's the teacher's problem. When there's violence in the schools, these teachers are not teaching our children manners and so forth. We forget as the nation that we are who we are because of the teachers and therefore we have got to support them. So it is not a matter of the union only to deal with the issue of education and the teachers. It is a societal matter that we need to then able to say, can we see teachers being treated as nation builders? Just like that you see a person who jumped out of the classroom and is in parliament today and is earning 1 million. And the teacher who touched that particular class jumper is still earning 400,000 with 2 degrees. And this person is earning 1 million. And the only thing they do is to insult each other at the parliament and embarrass us in the whole world as people who do not understand what parliament's role is and so forth. So it's because we don't appreciate. It's a mindset that we need to change. And I'm calling for that. We need to change that and start seeing the teachers for who they are. See the police for who they are and see the nurses for who they are as professionals and see everybody, their contribution, and say, can we be able to pay them what is due to them because this is what they are doing for our people.
And I'm sure somebody else who would be listening to this podcast would say, I believe that, what is due to a teacher, to a policeman, to a nurse, is what that person who sits in parliament is earning.
Yes.
Are we ever going to reach that stage, Mr. Badule?
We have to. We have to. We don't have time. We've got to reverse austerity measures. We've got to unite as the people of our country and reverse this particular thing. We instead have to interrogate policies of political parties as we support them as the people and say, is this what you're going to be able to do? And we have got to make sure that the policies or the law must change. It can't be that people who go to parliament, they go there for work. They must go there to serve. It's not a career to be a politician. Okay, when you want a career, be like me, go to college, go and learn and then be a teacher. I'm a qualified teacher. That's my career. I work for it. So you are going to be serving the people. You can't earn more than the people that have gone to school. and then you jumped during break time, you never came back, and then you go and mobilize, and then you go and be elected into parliament, and then you earn more than us. Mm-hmm. You are not, you know, they're not sending a good message
mm-hmm.
to our children.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to jump out of the classes and then during break never come back and say, I'm going to be a politician.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because politicians are earning more money.
Mm-hmm.
Compare yourself with other countries as politicians. They travel through buses, they travel through trains, they ride bicycle
mm-hmm.
to the parliament.
Mm-hmm.
We must reach that stage that says, when you are serving the people, mm-hmm. serve the people, and you must be paid what is due to.
Mm-hmm.
What is due to the politician is not what they're supposed to be paid. They don't deserve it.
Sure. Mr. Maluleke, we can spend the whole day talking about these issues, but I hope this is not the first and the last time,
you know,
because there's so much that we can unpack.
Yes.
You know, because now, as you're talking now, I was sort of reminded as well of, remember growing up, we used to have what we call role models.
Yeah.
You know, you look, it could be a soccer player, it could be a radio personality, but somebody who carries themselves, right, with so much dignity, you know, and that person draws so much respect, you know, from the ordinary folk on the street. We no longer have such role models, unfortunately.
I still have them, but blessed because at least they are resting in peace.
Yeah.
I still have the Ntate Kgathi, who was my principal and my maths teacher.
Mm.
And I had Kgathi, also teacher Mamabolo,
yes.
Who was teaching music
mm-hmm.
and teaching me physical science
wow.
when I was doing Form 3. They've remained my role model,
mm-hmm.
despite
mm-hmm.
the fact that they've left this world.
Yes.
I still say, I don't think I would be who I am today
if it weren't for them.
It was not for them. I'm mm. born in a farm
mm.
and working as a laborer
mm.
on the farm
mm.
and having been exposed to these two individuals,
mm.
I mean, opened my eyes and expanded my understanding of the world and
mm.
what is service to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, I agree with you. We used to look at Essence Ulema.
Yeah.
As our hero, mm. as a soccer star, mm. and Jomo Sono.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, Jomo is still alive.
Yeah.
Are we going to produce such people?
Sure.
And I believe that I'm very optimistic that if we can begin to change
the mindset
and our mindset and invest in education,
mm-hmm.
we can produce other role models.
Mm-hmm.
But our children do not aspire to that particular drug lord
mm-hmm.
in the corner
mm-hmm.
who is driving so beautiful cars,
mm-hmm.
and then they are only attracted to this material world
mm-hmm.
of that particular person, and then begin to be hooked themselves and begin to be selling drugs to our children in our schools.
Sure.
They must be able to say that Mandela is a small Mandela nyana,
mm-hmm.
or that's a smaller Sisulu nyana,
yeah.
or a Steve Biko nyana.
Yeah.
And so we need to produce those people.
Sure.
And we can.
And that forms part of that all-important issue around succession planning, right? Because life evolves, and it's. I always say to people, you know, how do I even put it? Life is not standing still.
Yeah.
It's forever changing.
Yeah.
And it requires you as well to adapt, you know, to all these changes.
Be agile.
Yeah. Mr. Maluleke, thank you so much for gracing our studios with your presence. We truly appreciate it.
Daddy, I want to thank you so much for the opportunity. We
yep.
really appreciate it as a South African Democratic Teachers Union, and want to wish our students well as they continue to be writing the examination. I want to make an appeal again to our people to not block roads that goes to school for the children to write. We appreciate, we understand your problems.
Mm.
Please let's resolve the problems without having to interfere with their writing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mr. Maluleke.
Thank you, sir.